Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolution.org Hardcore 2.0 is coming your way. This is episode 172. Today we're going to talk about Semaglutide 101, also called Ozempic and Wegovy by Parapharma. So in this one, we're going to go over, we're going to take a really deep dive. We have a full hour on this one. We're going to talk about all you're going to want to know about Semaglutide, what it is, how it works, the studies, how to dose it, and how to stack it with Parapharma products. And this is going to be a really, really good episode. We really prepared really hard for this one to bring you the best information that you're going to find on it. So if you like this podcast, please make sure you're liking and subscribing and you're doing all that good stuff for us. We're also on Apple and Spotify. If you did not know that, you can listen to us in the car. I like to listen to our videos in while I'm driving and kind of go back and critique each other, Mobster and I, because we want to make sure that we're doing the best job possible in bringing you this and continuing to improve this podcast. But if you want to keep it going, you've got to help us out. Do this. Make sure you're telling your friends and family. We want to grow this podcast as much as we can. The algorithms need to pick us up. If they don't pick us up, if we don't get any traction going, we can't keep this podcast going. So help us out on that, guys. Again, like, subscribe, tell your friends and family. Make sure you do all that good stuff. Give us reviews and give us comments. So let's get into it right away. What is semaglutide? So the background of what semaglutide is that it's used to treat type 2 diabetes and for weight management in adults who are overweight and obese. And it's found in both oral and injectable form. So we're going to, in this podcast, we're going to focus more on the injectable version. We'll talk very briefly on the oral version. Because in bodybuilding, that's what's used. And in 99% of situations in the bodybuilding world, you're going to want to go with the injectable version as it's going to require way less hassle and way less, you know, having to take it every day like the oral version. So bodybuilders and athletes, like anything, will use it to help manage blood sugar, lose body fat, manage appetite, whether on or off a cycle. So a bit of background on semaglutide. It's sold by a company called Novo Nordisk under the brand name Ozempic or Rybelsus, which is the oral version, for diabetes, and Wegovy is for the weight management. So pharmacists who fill prescriptions, they've been filling semaglutide like crazy, okay, the past few years. And the statistics show more than 13 million prescriptions just in the United States as of a couple years ago, with numbers today kind of fluctuating. I'm going to get into that in a second. But those who are getting prescribed by their doctors, who insurance companies actually aren't covering, they're paying upwards of $1,000 a month for semaglutide. So this is a very in-demand drug that a lot of people have been using and a lot of people depend on to help them with their drugs. So Novo Nordisk, their stock went from I believe this is split adjusted. It went from $1 or $2 when they were developing semaglutide, because it was, you know, they were the first one to bring these GLP-1s, and it rocketed up to like $140 a share. Okay, so if you bought it before the approval and everything, you made a fortune on Novo Nordisk. Since then, the stock has cratered. And, you know, as of this podcast, about 50, 60% off its high. And the CEO recently resigned. So we're doing this podcast in spring of 2025. So, and the reason that they're having a hard time now is because Eli Lilly came along and they came out with more modern GLP-1s, tirzepatide and retatrutide. Now, our last episode, you can go back and listen to retatrutide. And we're going to do a future episode, which you can also look at, on tirzepatide. And tirzepatide will be episode 174. Our previous episode was 171. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mobster, where we talked about retatrutide. So you can go back and listen to those. Yep. But semaglutide, look, At the end of the day, a lot of people like semaglutide. A lot of bodybuilders still like semaglutide. They know it. It's been the one around the longest. It's had the longest background. So a lot of you are going to want to use semaglutide, and a lot of you are going to be like, well, I just want to go with the Eli Lilly versions, which on paper may be better. But again, this is still a really, really good drug. Go ahead, Mobster.
Yeah, one of the things I found fascinating, Steve, was the price difference on this show and a previous recent show. You just said that one of the prices there is circa $1,000. In fact, I referenced in Wikipedia, which said very close to $1,000, $964 average in the US. But I actually believe, Steve, didn't allow for one of the issues was a shortage, which actually meant people were paying slightly over $1,000 to get their hands on this particular product. And yet, what I found fascinating, Steve, was the difference between one country and the next. I think it was a reference that I was looking at here, the $964, $936. I corrected. Japan, $169. And here in the UK, I'm not going to list all the prices, $93. So basically, one tenth of the price. And I'm assuming this is what people are paying versus, for example, as we have here in the UK, Steve, because it's a type 2 diabetes drugs, diabetic drugs tend to be free, even in England, Scotland and Ireland, where you have to pay for your prescriptions. Here, because of the NHS here in Wales, we don't have to pay at all. And that's because, of course, insulin, for example, type 1 diabetic drug can save your life. It can stop you going into a coma, etc. So we don't have to pay for drugs, specifically diabetic drugs, for that particular reason. But look at the price difference. And as Steve said, lo and behold, when another product comes along, one that I just mentioned, Tetra there, Steve, arguably on paper, and especially if it comes to medical conditions, arguably maybe obesity, is on paper possibly better all round. But I do like this, Steve. The reality of the situation is when it comes to anabolic steroids, when it comes to performance enhancement, we tend to, especially on these shows, I think, look at something that we are confident about the mechanism of action, confident in terms of knowing people that have already used the product, what side effects they might have had, confident in predicting the kind of dosages that would be used for performance enhancement, or in this case, for fat loss. So that doesn't mean that the other alternatives or more or less effective in that particular regards. It's just that we know 100% or close to 100%, we can be more confident of how something works, the side effects, the
Yeah.
dosages, etc. About describing how to use it and so on.
We have guys on the forum who, started using semaglutide, a couple years ago, and they really like it, and it's almost like they refuse to use anything else because they trust it. And that's some people are like that. And that's how it goes. So, we have we still have to see what goes on in the future, but we're gonna kind of give you the unbiased stuff behind it so you can.
There is a thought process here, Stephen. I'll use anabolics by way of comparison. And I've usually used this when it comes to exercising, nutrition, and even, as this is the example here, fat loss. If something works for you, you don't have to change to something else because it might be better, worse, etc. Keep doing that thing that works for you if you are successful at fat loss, you are successful at growing muscle, and so on, until it doesn't. And then look at alternatives. What we have also seen sometimes with anabolic steroids, especially Steve, is people will try other steroids just because they haven't used it yet. So I don't, you don't have to use every painkiller at the pharmacy. You don't have to use every steroid that's ever been invented. If what you're doing, your exercise works, your training program works, your diet works, and so on. If you are being successful, what I might argue, and this is an example again with steroids, we talk about short esters versus long esters. If a product like this requires a lower dosage or less pinning per week, and we are happy with the end results, then we can argue that that person is succeeding in life and they don't need to change anything. So what we do is, in these shows, is we're going to give you information on all of these kind of products as best we possibly can, and allow you with the information that we provide to make a choice that suits you and your targets, your aspirations, Steve.
Let's get into how it works. So listen very close on this, everybody. Semaglutide, GLP-1 receptor agonist, belongs to a class of drugs called glucagon-like peptide-1 receptor agonist. This means that it's going to mimic the action of natural GLP-1 hormone in the body. It does a great job of controlling blood sugar, which is why doctors will prescribe it to some of their diabetes patients. It enhances insulin release in response to a rise in blood sugar. So when you eat, it's going to slowly let that insulin out. It also reduces the amount of sugar that's released by the liver. This is why it's a popular option, again, for diabetics. So the way it helps promote weight loss as well is by increasing the feelings of fullness and reducing appetite. So you're going to get satiated a lot quicker when you eat. You're not going to be able to finish your meal. And if you eat one extra bite, you'll start feeling nauseous,
Nauseous.
you know? So one of the ways it does this is it slows down the emptying of the stomach. And that's very, very important. So you're going to quickly feel more satiated with less food. So forget going out to dinner and having a big meal like you may usually do, because you're going to be getting a doggy bag to take home because you're not going to be able to finish your meal unless you want to throw up afterwards, because that's what's going to happen. One of the biggest issues with people out there is food addictions and how it can make us feel emotionally to eat something not so good for us. This is a common problem among women, but it's also a common problem among some men. So semaglutide will help with that. So you're not going to want to even look at that extra slice of cake or pizza while using it. You're just going to eat a little bit and you're going to be like, I'm done. So it takes about 4 or 5 weeks to start feeling that effect because this is a slow build. I'm going to get into how to dose it in a second. But that's pretty much how it works. So when we
Yeah,
go in the
I was just going to comment here, Steve, and you actually referred to the whole thing of going out to eat food. So I nearly jumped in and said buffet, the word buffet. And I've seen this smorgasbord, which is a Swedish buffet, Steve, where you've probably seen this for yourself, and most of the listeners will be familiar with this particular scenario, whether it's in themselves or seeing it for themselves. You will see the truly, properly obese, the seriously fat, the 300 to 400 pounders will try to put as much food on their plate as possible. And they will come almost to the point of the food falling off the plate onto the floor and then go back and do that repeatedly. Whereas those of us, arguably, again, hopefully the majority of our listeners that are in shape will make particular choices of the buffet, whether that's chicken or lean cuts of meat or whatever else. Fill a plate up, but not have the food piled up so high that it's going to fall off the plate, and then only make so many trips as we would do fill full up. So think about how people become obese, whether that's too frequent feeding, constant snacking, and so on. And then think about this particular product. In the case of semaglutide, you won't physically want to do those things. Think about the science listener that's come together in such a way. I'm even thinking of something called Prader-Willi syndrome, Steve, I think, which is where the people suffering from Prader-Willi are typically the ones you will read that are 600 pounds, 700 pounds. And the argument's made that part of that syndrome, part of that condition, is they cannot or do not ever feel full up, that they will be constantly because they are never satiated. So the methodology of action here in your typical human being, never mind someone with type 1 or type 2 diabetes, is that normally the normal methodology of action in your body, it's literally a cascade of hormones here, Steve, that certain hormones are released by your body in order that you don't overeat, in order that you are not literally eating to the point of vomiting or being nauseous. And the idea that there is a product that can make you not overeat, that can make you feel full up sooner, and trickle the food back into the rest of the system for digestion, absorption, excretion, etc. It's fantastic. I mean, literally, as you said there, Steve, slowing gastric emptying, reducing the appetite, and arguably, Steve, stimulating or signaling to the body to produce other hormones, i.e., insulin, and so on and so forth, suppressing glucagon secretion, telling the pancreas what to do. All these things all at the same time. So when we sometimes hear the description miracle drug, I think I can understand the attraction of those people on the forum that are already using semaglutide, including yourself, when it comes to these kind of products, saying it's fantastic, the results are amazing, and so on and so forth. And it literally is tricking the body, if you like, into making you feel full, so you don't want to eat too much. And again, I'm reflecting back at the beginning of this part of the conversation to how the body works, to how those that are obese sort of think and feel and so on and so forth. And if you can trick the body in that particular way, then the results are fantastic. And to date, as we do this show, I can't think of a negative comment that's come up so far on the forums in terms of people's usage of it, except perhaps feeling the occasional need to come off and not use it long term. But that's another thing. There is arguably the negatives, which we'll look at later on with regards to retention of, or should I say, regaining body fat, but we're getting to that towards the end of the show, Steve.
When you're in a fasted state, you know, your body starts attacking fat stores for energy. And because you're no longer, you're depleted through your glycogen stores in your muscles. So your muscles will start appearing flat. So when I did an extremely long fast, that's what happened. My muscles flattened out. It wasn't that I was losing my muscle tissue. It was that my muscles were flattened out. So we have a lot of people out there who are giving misinformation and claiming if you take these GLP-1s that you're going to lose muscle. And it's just not true. If it was true, you wouldn't see these big bodybuilders on our forum who were, you know, using these GLP-1s with success, and they're having good results. And part of that is because they're using anabolic steroids with it. So, you know, we can scratch the surface of this and go kind of take it two different ways. We're trying to give you the information here, but you also have to realize that bodybuilders and normal people are different. So when you see these guys out there doing these podcasts and doing these videos who claim, oh yeah, don't take these GLP-1s, they're gonna burn your muscle away. No, they're not. When you run them correctly and when you're running them with anabolic steroids, they're not gonna burn your muscle away. I'm on them right now, okay, and I'm not even on a cycle, and I'm not burning away my muscle. I mean, it's just flabbergasting. There's no evidence that they burn their muscle. I looked through all the studies, there's no evidence that burns a muscle. If you lose a lot of weight, you're going to lose strength. That is true, because if your muscles are more flat. But here's my point, though, that I'm trying to get to. There's people out there that are on semaglutide, and they've been on semaglutide for months, and they don't have any progression at all. None. They don't have any progression. The reason is because they don't know how to eat, and they're not training properly. So when you're on this stuff, you have to make sure that you're telling, this is my point, just like when you're fasting, you have to do it the correct way. You can't just fast for 5 days and then break your fast with a whole pizza and junk food and expect to really get anywhere. So when you're using the semaglutide or any of these GLP-1s, you have to make sure that if you want to see the results, you have to diet correctly and you have to train. And in the studies, people were expected to do something within reason. In the bodybuilding world, most of us, I would hope, already have our diet on point. We don't drink alcohol. We don't do any of this other shit that we shouldn't be doing. So we already are doing everything right. So when you add these GLP-1s to it, then the magic happens. Now you're getting that cheat code effect of having that, you know, that effect where it mimics the action of natural GLP-1 and the hormone. It's almost like you're fasting, but you're also eating food at the same time. And it's so that's
let me cover that a little tiny bit, Steve. I'll cover it 2 points. One is that in the studies, and we actually looked at a similar product and a specific huge study. I think it referenced the same one that we're going to reference here with the 17,000 participants, Steve. All of the studies, every single of the big studies that we've looked at, all of the main studies that we've looked at regards all of these kind of products, but specifically semaglutide, came with the following line included, which was that all the participants, because they weren't kept in a room, because these were literally inpatients, outpatients, whatever, that means they were in hospital being treated, they came to visit the clinic, they participated in a study, they weren't kept prisoner, for want of a better phrase, which meant they went home and they did normal stuff that normal people do. And the advice was twofold. Number one, lifestyle. I exercise more, whether that's just getting daily steps in rather than lifting weights, fasting, doing cardio, like most of our listeners will, as Steve just referred to. And the other one was specifically dietary type advice. In other words, eat cleaner, eat healthier, stop eating junk food, just common sense stuff. And this was to all of the participants. And let me refer to the idea of losing muscle. And I'll just quote this again. A 2024 systemic review of six studies found that although reductions in body weight and fat mass were evident, changes in lean mass were minor, meaning they lost maybe a tiny bit. And again, that would be across all of the studies and all of the participants, which would be tens of thousands of participants. And again, Steve, as you and I were talking about in a pre-show for something else, the idea that some participants might have lost a little bit of muscle versus all of the participants losing muscle is statistically normal. So in other words, some of them might have dieted too hard. Some of them might have overexercised. So some lost a small amount. But across all of the participants on all six studies that we looked at, minimal, to say the least. And again, the majority of our listeners, the people that are listening to the show, the majority of the people on the forum will be training hard, eating cleanly, prepping their meals, getting the best results, and therefore arguably retaining, and even in some circumstances, Steve, growing muscle. So they wouldn't be statistically part of the overall. In fact, arguably, Steve, they would be more likely to retain and grow muscle than the average person. That makes sense. That's obvious. So just as an argument, again, if people are online citing something that they've read as sort of factual, I'm literally quoting the six studies. There's a reference for those six studies and so on and so forth. Yeah. So
there's
people need sometimes to make the quotation when they know what they're talking about.
Let's get into the studies. Look, phase two clinical trials began in June of 2008. So we have so many studies on this. And they really started studying GLP hormones since the 1970s.
Yes.
And Novo Nordisk started in 1998. So this just tells you how long it takes to develop some of these drugs. So, you know, we got to give Novo Nordisk credit, even though Eli Lilly is kicking their ass now. And they're probably going to continue to kick their ass. But we got to get Novo Nordisk credit for really putting in, you know, the hours and the manpower into this. And I'm sure the CEO, you know, got a nice golden parachute, I'm sure, which then, and that means in finance terms, that means where the CEO is basically paid to go away. You're basically here's, you know, $50 million plus stock, go away, resign. We're blaming you for the stock coming down. So that's how it works in the finance world. But look, we got to give them a lot of credit for that. So let's go over some of these studies. There's so many studies. Mobster has some studies. Let me go over three studies and that I found fascinating. And the first one was off PubMed. I'll include it in the article. This study showed a 20% reduction in major adverse cardiovascular events in 17,600 adults with pre-existing cardiovascular disease or obesity. The patients were treated for 4 years and showed a 10.2% reduction in weight, 7.7 centimeter reduction in waist, and versus 1% in the placebo group. So that was really, really a good indication of using this for 4 years and seeing the kind of benefits it has for your heart health and for your waist. And how many people in America do you see with the pregnant gut? I call it the dad, you know, some people call it the dad bod, some people call it the pregnant gut. But in America, it's an epidemic, okay? Middle-aged men, you won't find very many middle-aged men over 40 with abs. It's very rare. Even former athletes who used to run 4.2 40s in their prime and be able to dunk basketballs and be able to, you know, leap, you know, jump, you know, and do all kinds of things. You know, when they retire from the game, they end up, you know, having guts and being out of shape. So it's an epidemic. And this semaglutide help, you know, can help people reverse that. So it's really, really a promising, you know, finding for sure in that study. Another one was in AJMC.com study. Again, I'll link it in the article. And this study showed that a third of participants who took semaglutide for 68 weeks lost at least 20% of baseline weight, which compares to those who got sleeve gastrectomy bariatric surgery, which is something I would never recommend for anyone to do. It's very, very risky, and it can cause a lot of complications. So those who are on the drug also reported lower weight loss, lower BMI, better blood pressure numbers. They also improved their fasting plasma glucose and fasting lipid levels. Again, we go back to the weight loss, the help with the heart health, and all that good stuff. So it comes hand in hand. It's a domino effect. When you're heavy, when you got a big gut, you're going to have blood pressure problems. You're going to have heart problems. That's just how it is. And your arteries are going to clog up very, very quickly. So this stuff is very, very promising for that. Another study, it's a PMC study. And again, I'll link it in the article. Another study showed that a dose of 2.4 milligrams a week, which is a pretty hefty dose, who were diabetics and/or obese individuals for 20 weeks, resulted in a mean weight loss of 10.6%. Those who continued the treatment for another 48 weeks lost another 8%. But here's here's the downside. Those who didn't and were given a placebo gained 7% back. So that's the rebound effect of these GLP-1s. And this can happen when you're on it for a period of time and you stop taking it. Now it's no longer
Yes,
working your body. And a lot of the guys on the forum who've had experience using these GLP-1s for a long period of time then have come off. They've noticed their appetite is absolutely crazy. The same thing when you do a long fast. You do a long fast after day two, day three, and especially by day four, your appetite's gone. Okay, you're in deep ketosis, you don't have an appetite. Then when you break your fast, your appetite goes crazy when you break a fast, because your body knows, hey, you just got a big kill. You got to take advantage of this because we don't know the next time you're going to be in a famine state again. You may not eat another meal for another month. So you better eat everything you can now. So that's an evolutionary trait that got put in our body. So there is an argument to be made with these GLP-1s, and this ties into, dosing in and side effects, that you may want to run the course and then you may want to go slip back down to a maintenance dose. It's just like being on TRT for the rest of your life. You have to stay on it the
I'm
rest of your
agreeing
life.
with you here, Steve. I'm thinking this, right? When we talk about anabolics in the same sort of way of thinking, etc., there's the whole retention of muscle off cycle, keeping us lean, for example, if that's what you're aiming for, and so on and so forth, with other performance enhancing products and drugs. So there's a big argument for short periods of time on versus short periods of time off, Steve, as opposed to running it for a long time and then coming off. Because I think, and I can think of a couple of extreme examples. We see for, and I used this example on a similar show recently. Not that we're going to talk about this in depth, but when we talked about DNP, so one of the things that I'd noticed with DNP use was exactly what Steve just said. Used for relatively short periods of time at guideline dosages, and I'm not going to get into that. 80% of the users, in my experience, when you went back and looked at their logs, at their photographs, at their profiles, or whatever else, they didn't immediately respond, but later on they would say something to the effect of, I came back with as much body fat as I'd lost, and sometimes more. In other words, while their use had been successful, the bounce back, the rebound was horrendous because you'd lost all that body fat and got into shape, and then you've actually ended up in worse condition afterwards. So it kind of negated the use. Here, I'm thinking, and we need to see this looked at arguably in studies, because a lot of the studies talk about 36 weeks, 38, 38, 68 weeks, and so on and so forth. And I'm going to get into the study specifically now, Steve. What we're not necessarily looking at is the results after the studies and or cessation of use of the product. So I'd like to see that in a general population, and again, arguably in the trained individuals. Perhaps, Steve, and this is something I talk about in the forums when it comes to not being on PEDs, people need to make the changes that they made on cycle, or in this case, using a GLP-1 type product, and keep those changes in place. What a lot of people do, arguably, might be go on a diet, then come off a diet. Whereas I would say, fix your lifestyle, stay fixed. Don't go back to the habits before and then be surprised when you gain the fat back. Don't ease off your training after a cycle and expect muscle to stay where it is. You need to stimulate it just to stay there and maintain, and so on. The biggest one I looked at, Steve, AJ say AJConline.org did a referenced a meta study, meaning it looked at multiple studies. Let me clarify something I should have gone into greater detail recently on a similar podcast that we've not long recorded. Right. So the whole double blind use of placebos, completely randomized stuff. Here's the thing. And this is just for all kinds of studies in a similar scenario, not just for fat reduction or diabetes, but all kinds of studies. If you are, for example, lots of studies are paid for or sponsored by the company in question. And so there's an argument to be made that the researcher wants to give a positive outcome to use of said product because the sponsor is the name of the company that produce the product. In other words, you'll get more funding in the future if you give them a great result. So that was one argument. You have what's called peer-reviewed. Peer-reviewed is essentially people in your field, say chemistry, for example, as would be the case here, or human physiology, as also would be the case here, and look at what you've done and see that if they can make, going through the whole study, seeing what you did, see if they can think that the results that they would have come up with would be the same. It's also a reason why you very rarely refer to one study. So the example that I have here, Steve, was the meta study, meaning they went away and looked at, I believe for this example, four of the biggest studies. In order to get all those numbers that Steve just talked about, I actually represented here in this study, Steve, as you said, for example, decreased BMI, body mass index, waist circumference. One of the statistics that stands out, a further participants randomized semaglutide achieved at least a 20% reduction in body weight. You talked about this on another show, Steve, when you said if you weigh 300 pounds, that's 60%, 60 pounds less. So you would be 240 pounds after using semaglutide. That is huge. One of the things that sometimes comes out of studies is when you say, oh, it's a statistically significant number, and it would be like 2 or 3%. And you go, do you know what? I could do a 2 or 3% reduction. Steve could do a 2 or 3% reduction just dieting for a few days, just fasting like Steve does, just taking all the crap out of my diet. I don't think it is statistically, but 20%, Steve, is fucking monstrous. Talk about that just as a number, like you were talking about recently. Just for the average Joe, Steve, that is a lot of body weight, a lot of fat in a very short, relatively short period of time. Something else I said to you in the other show, and we're doing this show, over the longer period of time, and this is very unlikely, so statistically good again, when they were talking about 48 weeks, 36 weeks, it was statistically 1 to 1.2%, I believe, per week for the whole period of time. That is any diet. I'm thinking of all the Weight Watcher type protocols, normal diets, etc. We see 1-2 pounds a week, maybe for 10 weeks. What we don't see is 40 pounds in 40 weeks or 50 pounds in 50 weeks. So that makes this product that much more powerful, that much more potent, and therefore much more attractive. So look at the percentages again, Steve.
Yeah, and look, at the end of the day, sometimes people have, you know, things going on in their body. It could be a problem with body memory. I mean, if you've been fat all your life, it's not that easy to lose weight because your body knows to store fat. Your body knows to carry that fat. So it's different. If you've been skinny all your life and got out of shape, I was skinny all my life. Really toward the end of college going into, because I, when I was in college, I'd go to the gym and still work out and everything. I had a free gym to work out at. Then toward the end of my college, I got lazy. I got really busy with studying and stuff and my tests and all this shit. And I was working. So I really went away from, it wasn't a priority. So I got out of shape. And then when I was about 25 years old, I got back into shape and it was so fast. It was like within a month, I lost like 30 pounds because I just literally just started working out again and eating good again. And I lost like 30 pounds in a month because my body knew to be skinny. But a lot of you out there who have relatives or you yourself or friends or something, you can't lose the weight. You're missing that cheat code effect in the body that can only really be achieved by a prolonged fast. So this stuff allows you to really kills your appetite. So it allows you to do a lot of these fasting protocols. You can mix in the fasting with taking the semaglutide, where you, let's say you do an every other day fast. If you're really, if you know someone who's really, really overweight, you're really, really overweight, you could do an every other day fast where day one, you fast. Day two, you have two sensible meals or three sensible meals. Then day three, you fast. And day four, you have two or three sensible meals and keep that going. And it's not going to, you know, be difficult to pull off because the semaglutide is going to kill your appetite that you're not even going to want to eat those two or three meals, you know, on the day you're supposed to. You might only have, be able to eat one small meal. So you're putting yourself in a fasted state. And it's going to be easier to put yourself in a fasted state where before you were so hooked and addicted to food emotionally and physically that you couldn't not eat. And the nice thing too about these studies and these GLP-1s and the semaglutide, and this is very, very important, is it won't, the users don't report that low blood sugar, low energy side effect. Where you get, you know, that you know, people are like, oh my God, I gotta have sugar, I gotta have carbs, I gotta have sugar, I gotta have carbs, I can't go 2 hours without eating. This will, when you take this stuff and you don't eat for the whole day, you're not gonna feel that hypoglycemia or whatever people want to, you know, excuse it by, which isn't even there, but because they're so mentally hooked, addicted to food, you know, they think they have it. You know, I had someone years ago, Mobster, tell me, oh, Steve, you know, I can't fast. I'm like, why can't you fast? Our ancestors fasted for millions of years. Yeah, you can't fast. Exactly. Why can't you fast? Explain to me. It's like, because if I don't eat anything after 2 hours, I go hypo. And I'm like, dude, do you really think our ancestors had to eat every two hours?
Please.
Did they have a kitchen? Did they have a refrigerator?
No.
Where they could just go? Did they have a pantry? Where they just go supermarkets?
Yeah. Humanity would have died out, Steve. Yeah. Humanity would have died out.
Can you imagine animal on Earth go, you know, not surviving? So it's like, and then a lot of it is mental. A lot of it is mental. And literally, you get on this stuff, and this is the cheat code that you've been missing. And you could take this, and like Mobster said, you can go from 300 pounds to 220 or 240 pounds. And that's a huge change. Someone who's 300 pounds versus 220 looks completely different. And their blood markers improve. So, you know, someone.
So here's something else, Steve. I talk about improvements, right? I just made this note while you were talking. And this again came from that meta study, right? So it referenced, and I've seen this in the other studies. So this is obviously covering multiple studies here. Typically, people that are massively overweight, obese, have problems with joints, have problems with cardiovascular issues. What they call comorbidity, Steve, here includes hypertension, knee osteoarthritis, literally just the pressure of your fat ass leaning down onto your hips and your knees and your ankles because you are so heavy, because you're out of condition. Obstructive sleep apnea, that's actually kind of common in bodybuilders that are muscularly large. And that's roughly, it says here, Steve, over one quarter, greater than 25%. And the weight loss that we've described, by the fat loss, as opposed to minimal or no muscle loss, was showed an improvement, literally losing the weight. Their hearts worked better. Their blood pressure decreased back to healthier ranges. The knee and ankle and hip issues that some of them were struggling with improved again. In the example that we've given, the 300-pounder going back to 240 pounds, Steve, or dropping 60 pounds of fat, pretty much fat, is just going to feel better. Is going to, literally the way that they're walking around, their sense being able to sleep better at night, Steve, have lower blood pressure issues. So, for example, and I've referenced this on multiple shows, if we're looking at someone who's obese, how many other medications are they taking? What's one of the other things, just to finish, Steve? When we talked about this on a recent show, when we said liver fatty disease, very common, especially in the out of shape, and improvements in the blood test numbers of organ health and the indicators for organ health.
Yeah, and I'm shocked at how many Americans have this issue. It's shocking how much we have this issue, and it's a big, and this is a big reason why a lot of you out there or your relatives have no energy. I can't tell you how many relatives I have or friends, and I'm like, let's go hit the gym. Let's go for a jog. Let's go do. They're like, oh, I don't feel. I'm tired today. Well, that's why you're tired, because your liver is a pile of shit, you know, because of this. So This is things that need to be improved, guys and gals out there. So, all right. So how do I dose it? This is very, very important. So again, I'm going to go over the injectable and I'm going to go over the oral very briefly. Most of you are going to be want to use the injectable. You're going to start with a dosage of a quarter to a half a milligram once a week. And again, the whole reason for the injectable is because using this isn't something you just use for 4 weeks. This is something you need to commit for months and months, okay? In the studies, they went for a long time, 6 months, 1 year in the studies. And some of the studies that we talked about too, remember they went 4 years. So this is something you're gonna have to commit to. And the nice thing about the injectable is you only have to inject it once a week. The oral, you have to take it every day. So if you're a bodybuilder, why do you wanna take something that you have to take every fucking day when you can just take it once a week? Just inject it once a week, sub-Q, boom, you're done. So it comes in a peptide form, you reconstitute it, and then you go ahead, you store it, make sure you store it in your fridge before and after reconstitution. You can listen to our prior episodes on specifically how to take care of your peptides. So you need, again, the half-life is long, so don't expect this stuff to really kick in as much as you expect until 4, 5, 6 weeks into it. So don't just keep jacking up the dose week by week. Be like, oh, I don't feel it yet after the first week. I'm not having the proper progress I'm looking for the first week. So let me jack up the dose. No, you got to give it some time to kick in, because if you jack up the dose too fast, you're going to end up with the side effects, and then you're going to have to drop the dose back down. You're going to screw your whole protocol up. So slowly build it up, all right? And then the maximum is 2 milligrams a week, but a lot of you can get away with less in bodybuilding, even half a milligram. Just keep it at a half a milligram or 1 milligram max is fine. Now, in the studies, we saw people running it 2.4 milligrams for a year longer, and they were fine. They didn't die, but these are extreme situations where people who type 2 diabetes under the care of a doctor.
Massively fat, massively actually.
But they're under the care of a doctor. So in that situation, you're going to take this stuff at home. You're not under the care of a doctor. There's no need to run that kind
of stuff. You should be in better shape. You should be eating better. You should be training better.
So even half a milligram, we see guys on the forum, they're running like, if you can look at their logs, they're running half a milligram. They're doing perfectly fine. So I would really push it, maybe increase it by a quarter milligram after every 4 weeks. And then maybe after each week, you can increase it slightly and see to a level that you get it to. And then you can always drop it back down a little bit if you get there. And then once you get to a spot you like, you can drop it down after 6 months or even after a year to a maintenance dose and just keep it there. Maybe you just want to do a quarter milligram a week as a maintenance dose going forward. So these are
just
things.
For the benefit, sorry, just for the benefit of the listeners, Steve, Parapharma do a 5 milligram product. So as Steve said, you'd be looking at 1/10 of that, half a milligram. And I think we should also, Steve, as we talked about in a pre-show, and again, because we're looking at the holistic approach here, guys, you're not just going to take a drug and grow muscles. You're not just going to take a drug and shrink down as well. Also, listeners, for the benefit of you, check out Umbrella. We do great peptides in this example, and we'll have a product for you to look at as well. Steve, what would we recommend in terms of stacking for those that are looking to get into lean muscular shape?
And then we just mentioned the oral really quick in case those of you, you know, you, let's say your doctor is prescribing it to you or you want to get the oral version. So the oral version is called the Ribulus, and that's going to be for diabetics specifically. So most of you listening to this, this doesn't apply to you, but I just want to give it because we want to make sure you have all the information in case someone asks you. Maybe you have a friend who's diabetic and they're like, oh, I'm running some glutide. You're running it too? How much are you using? And you tell them, I'm running half a milligram a week. And they're like, what? I'm running a completely different dose. Well, it's because they're running the oral version daily. So the max dose on the oral is 14 milligrams a day, but they start at 3 milligrams per day for 30 days, just as an FYI. All right, so let's get into the side effects before we talk about what to stack it with really quick, because we really need to talk about this. So the side effects of semaglutide, they're mostly dose dependent. We've seen guys on the forum who have been running it, and the common issues is the stomach issues that can arise from it. Obviously, if you're going to overeat on it and you're deep into it, if you've been on it at least a month and you overeat, it's a chance you may throw up. You're going to have nausea. You might have cramps. Heartburn's another one. When I've used the GLP-1s and I've overeaten, and maybe I've eaten a little late in the day, I'll sit down in the evening, you know, to do some work, you know, on the forums or something, and I'll start feeling a little bit of an issue, my upper chest into my neck, like the heartburn, you know? So that seems to be a common thing among bodybuilders, the heartburn. So you want to be aware of that. And then diarrhea and constipation is also another side effect. I haven't experienced that myself on these, but a lot of people have. It just depends on your situation. So just be aware of that. And there is some evidence too that the side effects do go away over time. So the longer you stay on it, the better these side effects get. So that is a good thing.
Yeah, now, there was one more here, and I'm referencing a study conducted by researchers at the University of British Columbia referenced hair loss was higher in people who took semaglutide than were taking another similar product.
Huh,
with the semaglutide patients, 52% higher risk of hair loss than those who were taking an alternative product. I find it interesting, Stephen, you and I talked about this briefly in the pre-show. We actually did, I think we were talking about Winstrol. When we talked about hair loss, we were talking about EQ, with the idea that some users of EQ get anxiety. So it was interesting for me. So one of the things I'm thinking about here, if you are losing fat, is your scalp drier because you've lost fat, because you are getting in shape, because of the way that the body works, and therefore an issue? And something I said to Steve in a pre-show, I'll just throw this in as an example here, Steve, quickly. So one of the things that was looked at was the idea of suicidal thoughts. And I had a look at that, Steve, and as I told Steve in a pre-show. So we've talked about one study, 17,000 participants. The meta studies would have covered tens of thousands, and certainly thousands and thousands across the four studies that they looked at in the meta study. I don't think included the 17,000 study. And something I said to Steve was, in the example that was given, two users, I believe this was Sweden, has suicidal thoughts. And I said to Steve, statistically, if you take 1,000 people in the street right now, never mind semaglutide, but just 1,000 random people, stop them in the street, do a census, do a Q&A, and you took 1,000 people, you'd probably find more than 2%, more than two people. So certainly, because two people in 1,000 is almost like 0.1%, I believe, without me looking at it properly, maybe even less. So statistically small as to be ridiculous. When you've got 17,000 participants, when you've got thousands,
and the same goes for the other rare
any drug, any medication, the steroid stuff that you and I talk about, statistically, you're probably looking close to the average for 1,000 random people, probably 10%, Steve.
So they
2 or 3%.
So with semaglutide, pancreatitis, kidney issues, thyroid tumors, and vision changes were also, and I looked at this
you
number.
Get vision changes using ED drugs, Steve. Yeah. You get issues with gut. Using ibuprofen.
So the numbers are like 1%, not that
1%. Tiny, fractional.
Let me explain this. So it's not that 1% of people that took semaglutide got this. It's that there was a 1% increase, meaning it's very significant, statistically insignificant, and it could be just, you know, noise, you know. So it's just something we want to make sure you're aware of.
And look, Steve, like I said, we are not controlling the 17 fantastic participants because they're at home. They're not in a study, not locked in a room. They would have the statistically normal variations that you would get with that many people in population. As an example.
Yeah, and it would not have been studied that long in FDA approved and gone through those.
Let me give you a silly example that people, it's a news headline, and I'll give you this example. So some years ago, I went to the Wheeler shop at Charing Cross in central London. I didn't realize there was a CND rally, the anti-nuclear, or the nuclear disarmament organization. And roughly 100,000 people turned up. It's the biggest crowd I've seen in my life up to that point. In the newspapers the next day, they mentioned that someone had died. And I actually ended up looking this up. So if 100,000 people get together, one person will die at that event. That's statistically normal. But the headline the following day was person dies at CND rally. They would have fucking died. You get 100,000 football fans together, 100,000 soccer fans, 100,000 hockey players, fans together. One person will die. It's just normal. Someone will have a heart attack from the suicides of the crowd. So when you look at this stuff, it's like almost a negative for no reason. The idea that two people out of thousands and thousands of Swedish users had suicidal thoughts.
There was a. I'll mention something ridiculous. Similar. There was something I read where in Wisconsin or Minnesota or something, hunters or like six hunters that died during deer hunting season, and they're like,
"Not shooting each other accidentally."
No. What happened was they would go and walk for miles.
Which I didn't normally do.
And shoot a deer, and then have to drag. It's not the walking; it's to drag.
The deer back.
And then along the way, as they're dragging the deer back, they get so exhausted because they're so excited and their adrenaline is so high that they just drop dead of a heart attack. Because they're so fucking fat and out of shape. You know, they're just the typical prototypical fat American fuck. You know?
Yeah, so if they got shot, it was that their mate didn't realize I've seen stuff like this, Steve, the hunters, where they've accidentally shot a buddy when they'd been trying to shoot him. Because they're really piss poor fucking rifles. And he had a bright orange bloody gilet on and they still managed to fucking shoot him in the forest. Yeah. But if you saw this as a headline.
A large animal back. That just tells you what our ancestors had to go through. They had to go find the animal, manage to kill it with a bow and arrow or with some other tool, and then have to drag that shit back to camp, then process it. See, these hunters, they'll take it to a person to process. They won't even process it themselves in a lot of cases. So, I mean, really, and they're dropping that. So this shows you how out of shape we are in America. So, look, at the end of the day, these drugs work, but you have to also have your diet and training on point. Otherwise, you're wasting your fucking time. So let's get into steroids.
One more point. Yeah, steroids as well. I was just going to make one more point, which we've made previously. I have seen some users talk about microdosing, which means fractionals of a milligram on a daily basis rather than the once-a-week injection. To date, and this just comes from looking at people that we know that are using it, we're not seeing any great differences at all, really, statistical differences between daily dosages or weekly dosages. And again, the studies all pretty much worked around the idea of one injection per week. Having a patient come in, be given the injection in a medical situation, and then leave, and still having these amazing successes. So if you were going to do a cut, Steve, what parapharma products would you look to be using with this to get the best results?
And the nice thing too, you can come on our forum, evolution.org.
Yes.
Come on the forum, join up, and you can see the guys running these. You can search for semaglutide, and you can see these guys running this GLP-1s. And you'll see what they're stacking with. So some of the popular options that Parapharma has that you could stack with it. First one I'll talk about is Primobolan. Now, Primobolan is the golden nectar steroid. Back in the 70s, Arnold loved Primobolan. He'd run Primobolan like 500, 600, 700 milligrams a week. And he would run it really solo. He'd run it with testosterone. And he would keep his diet on point. And he would train his balls off. And he had fantastic results. He loved using Primobolan, especially ahead of a show. Equipoise is another great option. And Equipoise is very versatile. If you want to go more cardio-centric with your journey and you want to focus a lot on cardio, Equipoise won't fuck with your cardio. It will actually help your cardio. And so will Turinabol. Turinabol is an awesome oral steroid if you want to go the oral route. So with Equipoise, similar to Primo, you want to run anywhere from 300 to 600 milligrams a week, but most people stick to around 400 milligrams. With Turinabol, when I'm doing more cardio-centric training, I like to stick with Turinabol. In fact, I have some Parapharma Turinabol sitting with me, right in front of me, Mobster, and these come with 25 milligrams tablets. So I'll take one a day. That's it. I'll just take one a day at 25 milligrams. That's all I need. And that, it won't fuck with my cardio. It won't give me
pumps. It would help. It will help, Steve.
It's one of those things where it's not going to cause side effects and it's not going to really destroy your body and cause a lot of inflammation where it's going to fuck with your cardio. So I can do a lot of cardio on Turinabol or I can do a lot of cardio on Equipoise, no problem. If you want to go more the hardening route, Masteron is an injectable. And Masteron, Parapharma has excellent Masteron. It's clean. It's very smooth. They have the propionate option if you don't mind injecting more often. And they have the enanthate option. And I've run Masteron before. at 500 milligrams a week. And let me tell you something. I went to a massage therapist and she was just like, I've never massaged someone with harder muscles than you. She's like, Steve, no wonder you're coming to me complaining because your back hurts, because you're so fucking hard. And I'm like, yeah. And it's like sleeping on rocks at night because your back muscles are so fucking hard on this stuff. So if you want to harden up and really get a nice beach physique, but you've got to be low body fat. Otherwise, you can't harden up fat. So if your stomach is covered by fat, get rid of the body fat first. Run this semaglutide first for like a few months. Get more of a flat stomach where your abs are actually showing. Then you can run the Masteron to really show off those abs. And Anavar is another great one. So talk about some of the ones you like, including Anavar.
I love the Tiranabol as a problem. I like the Primo run relatively low dosages, Steve, 200 to 300 milligrams a week. Some users are using 1,000 milligrams of Primo, but I think they're looking to grow muscle. And given its expense, I would argue that it would not in that situation. And of course, Primo, especially back in the 1970s, Steve, was used by people like Arnold, dieting and cutting down for competition as a way of retaining muscle tissue. And again, he talks about this. So you would harden up, use a Masteron, or you would retain muscle tissue while you're dieting, while you're training your ass off, and using semaglutide to get rid of to help you get rid of the body fat. So I like the idea of that, Stephen. Of course, it was T-Bol was specifically developed for that. One of my favorite orals, and I've said this before, boosting for strength and minimal increase at the dosages of 30 to 50 milligrams a day, 4 to 8 weeks of Parapharma. Anavar. As is Anavar. I love it for strength and very, very simple, straightforward approach to me. And again, you're dieting, you're trying to get into shape, you're using semaglutide. I think this is going to act like Primo against even retaining muscle tissue for you. And we've also talked about minimal muscle tissue loss here. You've mentioned, I think the Winstrol Parapharma does the oral and injectable versions, Steve, 50 milligram injectable per mil and 10 or 50 milligram per pill in the oral version. Talk about the more extreme, and I'm just going to bring Steve in for trend because we know that we've got some trend god lovers out there
So
as a way of recomposition on semaglutide.
I'd be very curious to see more guys log. If you are experienced and you want to grab your balls and do a trend with semaglutide, I'd be curious to see how you make out on that. Because I know when I'm on trend, I'm good for like one throw up at least once a month, one good throw up. Because trend fucks with your stomach a lot. It causes a lot of inflammation in the body.
It's hardcore fucking this example.
And you get nauseous just using 200 or 250 milligrams of trend. I mean, you just get nauseous. And if you don't drink enough on trend, you just feel like shit, like you get the flu. So I'd be curious stacking semaglutide with trend. I don't know if that would be a good idea.
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe, and I'm only thinking of the hardcore, Steve. Perhaps
But
the
I'd be
greatest
curious if someone can pull
recomposition,
that
the
off.
greatest. Yeah,
Maybe
the side
someone
effects would be
crazy could.
brutal.
I'd be worried about literally every time eating something, you'd be at risk of throwing that up because trend alone would make you feel nauseous and feel, sick. You
Let
can
me just
imagine.
refer to, as we're getting towards the end of the show here, Steve, just as an example, we mentioned this particular gentleman. We talk about logs on a forum and we say, come onto the forums and check out logs of people that are running semaglutide. Just as an example, this particular person, Roid Rage, the man, rather than Roid Rage, the wife, and even herself, doing incredibly well. Roid Rage, this last weekend, Thursday, Friday last week, Steve, as we do this show on a Monday, almost pulled a lifetime PB of 655 pounds on the deadlift. At the lowest body weight, while he's using semaglutide, so he's lean as he's ever been, I believe 245, 249 pounds. Again, as we do this show, and I believe he was 260, 270 just a few months ago. So he's as lean as he's ever been and nearly did a lifetime PR on a deadlift. As I recall, purpose of his current training log is to try and beat the master's record in the United States for his height, weight, et cetera. I'm going to say master's three, master's four. So he's doing fantastically well, using semaglutide and at his all-time best strength and the lowest body weight, the leanest body weight he's been for years. I'm using him as an example. What this is kind of representative of what we've seen on the other semaglutide users on the forum. So today, the results have been very, very positive. Let's talk briefly, Steve, about Parapharma and why we rate and recommend companies like Parapharma. Look, I have personally done a cut log, 4 weeks, Parapharma, using a cut stack 150 type product that they produce, ably provided for me for the purposes of that. I've used their product. I know the outcome that I got was positive. You can come onto the forum and check my log just for Parapharma products. You can do the semaglutide searching or Parapharma searching, and you will come across multiple users that have used their products to the to positive end results. So talk about your experience with and the reason why you would rate and recommend Parapharma as well, Steve.
Yeah, and first of all, you can come on again. You can come on the forum. A lot of people keep asking us in the comments, where can I get Parapharma? Where can I get this? Come on the forum, guys. We can't say where to get it from on these websites because that's the, you know, they'll instantly.
Never on social media.
Yeah,
never,
they'll delete the message. So we remember, this is underground. So you got to come on the forum to find out where to get it. Come on the forum and ask. We're here to help. And look, Parapharma, the reason that Parapharma, we talk about Parapharma, is because they are legit. Their yes. products are legit. I use their products. Mops uses their products. Other guys and gals on the forum trust their products. We know when we order from them, we're getting what we order. We know that the dosages are the dosages. We know that if we're going to waste our money and waste our time on a 12-week cycle, we're going to get the most out of that 12-week cycle. We're not going to run the cycle 6 weeks into it and be like, oh, shit, I got fake gear. Happens all the time. We get guys every day posting. They're not going to scam you. You're not going to send them Bitcoin and then it's gone. You got to trust that person. You know, a lot of these sources, we see people all the time. They send
thousands Bitcoin of dollars sometimes. See, thousands.
Some source that's not approved. And then they lose their money. So you don't have to worry about that with Parapharma. They are do a damn good business by taking care of their customers and providing great quality products.
Yep.
And their products are as good as you're going to find out there. And they've been tested independently and they've come out 98-99%, which is pharmacy grade numbers.
Yes. Yes. Better than pharmacy grade because of the deviation that's allowed. They've been around, Steve, over a decade. You see multiple resellers, one or two of the biggest resellers in the industry, rating and recommending.
And they have great. Another thing I like about them too, for us normal guys, normal Joes out there, which most of you are, is they have sales all the time. So they have sales. The more you buy, the more you save. They have excellent. So again, you can come on the forum and check out their sales. We got a guy on the forum, Quad Sweep, who's always posting sales threads. On a
40% off regularly, guys. So absolutely, Steve. Ways of saving multiple things you can buy. And again, look, we're looking at here, I think, the 45 unique products, companies that have lasted over a decade, products that are trusted, products that have been tested. They've been tried by people like you, the listener, using it and great results. What we encourage you to come onto the forums, look at these logs that we've described, not just promos or Parapharma products or whatever, but go onto the logs, search for someone like yourself, and you will find examples of average Joes, freaks of nature, strength idiots like myself, whatever, that have used Parapharma products and got great results. And you go, okay, I'm not just seeing this now and again. Mobster run it for 4 weeks, Steve's run it for 8 weeks, someone else has run it for 10 weeks. This isn't just random made up stuff. This is page after page after page of us talking about our experience on a daily basis. What we trained, how we ate, how much of the product that we used, the specific product that we use. And so you can search for the specific. Do you want to run a Rinstrol stack? I run a cut stack, which is multiples of esters. Someone else will run something for bulking and so on and so forth. So you will find not just a person that trains like you, that looks like you, but wants to run the same stack as you did and ended up getting great results using Parapharma. Tell us your thoughts on semaglutide. Is it the next big thing as far as you're concerned?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's the longest tracked GLP-1 and it'll always be the first one. So you have to give it credit for that. But like, just like anything else, you know, they come up with better things. So we'll have to see, is the Eli Lilly retatrutide and the tirzepatide going to kick its ass? And so far, it looks like it may be, but still a lot of doctors are still prescribing semaglutide because they're comfortable with it. And it's been around for a long time.
And it works. It works. We've seen the numbers.
Yep.
So, listen, like I said at the beginning of the show, guys, I mean, look, ask you, we're going to give you the information that you want on products that you're considering using or already using. More information, more advice, more statistics, more facts. Let's BS. It's the reason why we do these shows. And so we're putting that stuff out there. Let us know what you think in the comments below, guys. Please note, we are not doctors and your opinions are ours. It is our view and based on our experience and views on the topic. A podcast for informational purposes and entertainment only, the freedom of speech and the First Amendment.